Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
John Solomon, the editorial director of the Aspen Institute of Sports. John, how are you? Thank you for joining us.
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
John, first of all, tell us about the Aspen Institute of Sports and what you guys do there.
Sure. So the Aspen Institute, we're a nonprofit, and the Sports and Society program, one of our main initiatives, is called Project Play. And we develop, share, and apply knowledge to help stakeholders build healthy communities through sports. We largely focus on youth sports participation, ranging from kids ages 6 all the way to high school, about how to grow participation for all kids, regardless of their ability, regardless of where they live.
So, I mean, how important to you is it? I mean, it always seemed to me like playing sports for a kid, even if they weren't great at it, was important to learn a lot of different things about life, I think. How important is it to you for kids to play sports, even if they're not great at it?
Oh, yeah, it's incredibly important. I mean, we know there's so much research out there showing the benefits that come from playing sports, not just, of course, the physical activity, which we know is really important, but the social and emotional benefits. It can lead to, you know, goal setting and initiative and, you know, developing personal growth. So there's so many benefits related to it academically as well. And for right now, for a lot of kids, they haven't been able to play it for a while. It's been pretty tough for them.
We're talking with John Solomon, Aspen Institute of Sports, the editorial director. John, the other day, I actually retweeted one of your tweets because you had retweeted something about Harvard and their decision not to have in-person classes. And you mentioned in your tweet that, you know, they are going to probably move their sports to the spring, their fall sports to the spring. Now, obviously, the Ivy League is a little more contained, but still, what do you think is going to happen? I mean, do you think there will be other conferences that will do the same? Or may they just have a shortened season in the fall?
It's hard to totally say, but it's not looking good for college football right now. I think it'll be a mixed bag, and that's one of the challenges with college football is there's no one entity overseeing it all and making decisions. And also you have different parts of the country that are doing better than others. I think there will be many university presidents who will strongly take into consideration the Ivy League decision, because some of these university presidents even view themselves as peers, you know, of the Ivy League. And, yeah, and the Ivy League in some ways could provide some cover for some universities, presidents, and conferences to make that similar decision as well, assuming that the Ivy League is moving to the spring. There's a lot of respect for the Ivy League. I mean, they've got some of the top-notch health experts out there, some of the best scientists and researchers out there. They were ahead of the game when it came to closing the basketball tournaments. They shut down their tournament in March. They got a lot of criticism about that for 2 days, and then everyone else shut down as well once Adam Silver and the NBA closed. Right. I think there will be some Power Five conferences that are still going to continue to try, and they're going to, you know, wait it out here. Maybe a decision, you know, late July, maybe it's early August. But I'll just tell you, I mean, college football, in my opinion, and talking to a lot of public health experts as well, just maybe one of the toughest sports to bring back during a pandemic.
Do you think that we'll actually have a fall season in some capacity?
I don't know. There may not be. No, I mean, it's quite possible that you just push this to the spring and say, let's hope things are better for the spring. It buys us a little bit more time. Maybe there's a vaccine by then. That's, you know, still up in the air, but that there's hope. Right. You know, maybe it's more settled down. That will create its own challenges as well, playing in the spring. But it's looking more and more pessimistic for college football to play to play in the fall and to play a whole season of the fall. So it's one thing, right, to just start it, but then how quickly might you have to stop it if you have a bunch of players testing positive, and can you restart it again? And can you still play opponents who are coming from other parts of the country, and they may have positive cases coming from them? So there's a lot of complications, and one of the biggest challenges, of course, is that these are 18 to 22-year-olds, and they're going to be on a college campus, and they're going to be going to classes, presumably, and they're going to be socializing, presumably, with other students. And we've already seen in some of these voluntary workouts with them back on campus some pretty high numbers of cases in some instances. Some schools have kept it very low.
Right, but I mean, I guess my question is, and again, we don't know the data fully at this point, but it seems as though, I mean, you're going to have big numbers. I mean, it's passing very frequently with young people. I mean, you're going to have a kid test positive on the day of the game, and if you're not willing to play, you know, that game that day, then you're not going to have a season. I mean, you're going to have to either quarantine that player or those players that tested positive and play through it, or just not even try to play, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah, so sorry.
What do you think? What's
the question?
No, I guess the question is, you know, if you have a player test positive on the day of the game, would they be able to play again?
Would they be able to play again? I mean,
play the actual game. I'm sorry if I'm cutting out there. Oh. Maybe it's a bad connection. Would you be able to play a game with the player? Not the player that tested positive, but he's on the team, been around everybody, test positive, and then you actually have a game that day. Alabama, LSU, Ohio State, Michigan, starting quarterback test positive. You got to pull him out, but you still play the game.
Yeah, I know. So that's one of the questions that's never been answered so far by universities. And that is, to your point, how many positive cases does there have to be before you say, oh, no, we just have to shut it all down? And it may not be just one, right? But it could be, is it five? Is it 10? You know, what's the number? You know, what has been the interaction with that player with other players as well? But we haven't gotten a good answer on that from college football. It's a tough answer. It's a tough question to answer, but it's going to have to be answered at some point.
We're talking with John Solomon, the editorial director of the Aspen Institute of Sports. John, yeah, I mean, you know, you've talked about it, and you said it, that people have told you it's one of the hardest sports to bring back. We talked about the lack of a overall governing body. We're seeing, obviously, coronavirus numbers going up all over the country. I just saw that 919 deaths in the country due to coronavirus today, which is the highest number in over a month. So, and we're talking about college students as opposed to pros and athletes. All of this, are these all the reasons? Is there something I'm missing as to what makes college football the toughest one?
No, I think you're hitting on a lot of it. I mean, I also would add, of course, it's a football, which is a contact sport, right? So, I mean, you're breathing on each other every single play. You're on piles. There's contact, blocking, tackling, every single play. Larger roster sizes, players and coaches and staff. College football is traveling to different regions, you know, or different states, you know, for games. So you're potentially bringing transmission from you or with you, you know, to a different place. Unlike the pros, where some pro leagues like the NBA or NHL are going to try to create these mini bubbles, you can't really do that with college sports because they're students, and then you're really acknowledging them that they're employees, and then you got to sort of pay them, and you have to let them collectively bargain and have a union. So those are some of the factors that really make it challenging.
How much money you think the NCAA, or maybe it's a better question, the universities stand to lose if they don't play in the fall?
That's a good question. I mean, so for the NCAA, it wouldn't be a ton, right? Because the NCAA really doesn't oversee it. They don't have any authority or power over college football. I was talking to one administrator at a Power Five school, estimated, he thought, like for some Power Five schools, if they don't play the entire year, not just fall, right, but say they don't play in the spring either, they might be out $60-70 million. I mean, when you're talking about ticket revenue and donations and the TV money and, you know, other sponsorship money, so it's a significant amount of money. And I think one thing that this pandemic has shown in relation to college sports, we've already always known this, but it's really laid it out to bear, is just how reliant athletic departments are on college football money. It's not a very diversified model, you know, when it comes to revenue and being able to, you know, spend on other sports. It's kind of all or nothing. And if you don't have college football money in this coming year, the the model is going to look dramatically different for college sports, and there's going to have to be a lot of serious rethinking of how money is spent and a lot of budget cuts, and it's going to be very challenging for people.
John, I know another thing you've talked about in the past, you know, and I've talked about a lot on this show. We've talked about it, you know. Is about players being able to make money off their own name and likeness. The fact that they can is beyond absurd. The fact that there are people that defend that they can't is insane to me. It looks like we're trending, and some states have, you know, put laws out there. California started this. How quick do you think till this happens?
It's going to happen here because there's actually a law, you know, in Florida come next summer, I believe it's July 2021, they have passed a law, you know, that's going to allow college athletes to make money if you're playing in the state of Florida, you know, off their name, image, and likeness. And there's some rules around it and some, you know, some guardrails a little bit and all that. And California is a couple years beyond that. There's some other states that are trying to pass it as well. But Florida, you know, a year from now, I think it's like July 1st, 2021, is when it would pass. So the NCAA is feverishly trying to get national legislation because they don't want a state-by-state approach. They're also trying to get an antitrust exemption from Congress, meaning that that essentially they couldn't get sued again, you know, over antitrust violations in the future. They've lost a lot of antitrust cases. And there's, you know, Congress just had a hearing last week on this, the Senate committee. There's some mixed opinions about it. I think there will be some sort of federal legislation that is brought forward here in the coming months. It may not be until after the election in November. But whether there's an antitrust exemption is going to be a much bigger question, because that would in some ways give the NCAA a lot of immunity from some problems and issues that they've created themselves over a number of years.
They shouldn't give it to them. What do you think?
I probably would not give the NCAA immunity.
Yeah, no doubt. John, thank you so much for your time. We appreciate it. Thanks for joining us.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.